It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Blue Origin blast off. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast.
5, 4, command and start. 2, 1.
The world's richest man, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, and three others took a 10-minute ride high above the Texas desert to the edge of space. It was the ride of a lifetime for Bezos' brother, Mark.
I was never panicked. I got a little emotional when I was sitting waiting for the launch and just thinking about my kids and my wife and everything. It's a profound moment.
Correspondent Mark Strassman was there.
It went picture perfect, the way that Blue Origin wanted it to, the way they were confident that it would go, the way that Jeff Bezos had dreamed it would go since he was 5 years old watching Apollo 11 land on the moon. I mean, you heard him say this is the greatest day ever.
Bill Hemmer of Fox News was on the air during the historic flight.
Wow. Only in this country can a kid dream about this day at age 57. Not only be the world's richest man at $200 billion net worth, but remake the way you order a package that's delivered to your house, and then one day you spring this idea on the world, and we watch it together. Man, that was cool.
Cool indeed. The hope is that space tourism will pave the way for future missions to the moon and beyond. Former astronaut Mike Fossum.
Private companies really can start taking what NASA has proven and developed over the last 60 years and start running with it. You know, in the early days where the Wright brothers, you know, proved the concept of flying. To me, this is almost like we're reaching the barnstorming era.
Jeff Bezos' plan from here is to blast paying customers into space and return astronauts to the moon soon, and one day hope to colonize Mars. As coronavirus cases climb, debate is underway about whether or not to bring back the face masks. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
A mask doesn't arrest the progress of the variant. Vaccination does.
America's top coronavirus advisors are testifying on Capitol Hill today about mask mandates heading into another school year. Pandemic point man Anthony Fauci supports face coverings in the classroom because of the emerging Delta variant.
When you have a degree of viral dynamics in the community and you have a substantial proportion of the population that is unvaccinated, you really want to go the extra step, the extra mile. I think that's a reasonable thing to do.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommending everyone in school age 3 and up wear a mask.
There's been absolutely no data on masks in kids who are vaccinated, and many of us think that that vaccinated protection is pretty good to reduce transmission significantly. Plus, remember, a lot of kids struggle with masks. Some do well, but some really struggle with
it. Dr. Marty McCary at Johns Hopkins.
We've imposed a tremendous amount of restrictions on our 50 million kids in the United States based on one number, 335 deaths. Now, just for context, 500 kids die from RSV virus or the common cold virus. Now, I'm not downplaying those deaths. That's important. If we can save one life, we need to do everything. But the CDC has never looked into those numbers.
The CDC recently said that kids and teachers who've been vaccinated do not need to wear a mask at school. President Biden has walked back his Facebook is killing people claim after condemning the social media site for spreading misinformation about the COVID vaccine. The commander-in-chief clarified those comments at the White House Monday.
Facebook isn't killing people. These 12 people are out there giving misinformation. Anyone listening to it is getting hurt by it. It's killing people. It's bad information. My hope is that Facebook, instead of taking it personally, that somehow I'm saying Facebook is killing people, that they would do something about the misinformation about the vaccine. That's what I meant.
Facebook accuses the White House of scapegoating the social media site for its failure to get 70% of the American people vaccinated. A massive wildfire in southern Oregon, so strong it is generating its own weather. The blaze spawned fire clouds and even lightning. Here's reporter Liz Dinn.
We know 67 homes have been destroyed, as well as more than 100 other structures. This fire is just 25% contained.
The so-called bootleg fire is the largest in America, encompassing an area larger than the city of Los Angeles. It's one of 80 fires in 13 western states burning out of control. The smoke from some of those fires causing hazy skies for us today. Officials in Germany rejecting claims that they were not prepared to deal with severe flooding, which has killed nearly 200 people throughout Europe. Correspondent Chris Livesay speaking to a woman in a German town near the Belgium border.
Did the town give you any warning?
On Facebook, yes, on Facebook. But my mother, my father don't have Facebook. All the people, the old people.
The flooding, the worst in Germany in over a century. At least 700 people are still missing. A massive $26 billion settlement is in the works to help resolve America's opioid epidemic. Three drug makers, including Johnson & Johnson, going to pay to settle claims that they helped fuel the drug crisis. Overdose deaths last year topped 93,000, the most in U.S. history. New York State will be getting over $1 billion from this settlement. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says illegal immigrants who cross the border into Texas are being bused and flown into his state.
What the feds are basically doing is giving them a bus ticket and letting them go where they want to go. This is a total disaster. You have people that are coming across, and they know, every one of them knows, that as long as they get across, Biden's going to end up releasing them. Make no mistake about it, this is a deliberate policy to allow illegal migrants to be able to go all across the country in violation of our laws.
DeSantis says the people from 140 nations are benefiting from America's open border policy. Florida Congresswoman Kat Kamick.
This Biden administration has basically said, if you're from any other country, if you're from any other nationality except for Cuba, come on over. It's like a welcoming party, truly the most expensive welcoming party I have ever seen. And it's heartbreaking. You cannot begin to protect your hometowns if we can't defend the homeland. And that starts with border security.
Florida officials say 70% of the illegal immigrants interdicted in Texas wind up in Florida. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Tuesday, the herd comes home. Hero cop in Jamestown and home explosion near Buffalo. Those details after this.
Well, through the afternoon, hazy sunshine, warmth, humidity prevail. Some of us, though, will catch a heavy thunderstorm. Forecast details are coming up in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin Williams, we'll see you then. Let's check the headlines across New York and Pennsylvania. A woman died in a home explosion this morning in Lackawanna, New York, outside Buffalo. That blast happened just after 7 a.m. on Bedford Avenue. Michael Salamone is a volunteer firefighter who lives across the street from where that home once stood.
I just stood there. I thought, what happened? When the debris stopped falling and the smoke cleared, I could see the house across the street was leveled, was gone.
600 people in the surrounding area lost power. 7 nearby homes were damaged. No word yet on what caused that home explosion near Buffalo. Jamestown, New York cop is being hailed as a hero today for saving a family from a house fire early yesterday. Mark Conklin rushed toward the home, which was totally engulfed in flames on William Street in Jamestown.
How many people are in there? What's the address here? What's the address? Come on. I got you. I got you. Come on. Jump, jump. I got you. I got you.
Several children and an adult were trapped on the second floor of that home, and one by one, Conklin instructed those trapped occupants to jump from a window, and he caught them one by one from the ground below. School teachers in New York say they are eager for a return to normalcy come the fall. Natalie McKay is president of the Schoharie Teachers Association.
We are definitely ready to go back. We're excited. We're looking forward start to having some semblance of normalcy, hopefully.
Jasmine Gripper with the Alliance for Quality Education says mental health will be a major focus when kids return to the classroom.
What we want to do is support them and to help them get reacclimated into being in crowds, reacclimated to being with their peers, and reacclimated to being in the classroom and learning in person again.
Districts still awaiting final guidance from the state when it comes to face masks. As they say, the jury's still out on that one. New York's SUNY system plans to reopen all 64 campuses at full capacity this fall. SUNY Chancellor Jim Mulatris says vaccination rates for students are actually outpacing the general public. He reminds students that before they can return to campus, they must be able to show proof of vaccination.
We would like to get as many people vaccinated on our campuses as possible, because that allows us to return to normalcy.
SUNY rules state that all students must be fully vaccinated before they can return to campus. Some parents are not happy about that.
Medicine is a choice. It's a personal choice. I don't want my daughter to get it. I think that we have a right as an American citizen to decide what we do or do not put into our bodies.
The SUNY system has started a 30-day vax challenge to get shots in the arms of as many SUNY students as possible. As COVID cases climb across the country, the infection rate remains flat. In Pennsylvania, experts say the key in the Keystone State is to get the vaccine to as many as possible.
Those people who haven't been vaccinated really should be vaccinated. So anyone 12 or older should be vaccinated.
Pennsylvania's Physician General, Dr. Denise Johnson.
And the cases that are continuing are in the populations that are either not vaccinated at all or only got one dose of a two-dose vaccine.
Dr. John Goldman is an infectious disease specialist at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center.
Right now, almost everyone who is infected is unvaccinated. The vaccines are probably 60 to 90% effective against the Delta variant.
6 in 10 Pennsylvania adults are fully vaccinated, and that's fifth best in America. Nationwide, 32% of Americans have not yet gotten a single COVID shot. Well, vaccinated Americans can enter our neighbor to the north, finally. It starts Monday, August 9th.
We're thrilled. Everyone's like basically doing cartwheels.
The Canadian government says those crossing the border still need to take a COVID test before they arrive.
I think this is the Canadian attempt of saying, we'll meet you halfway. We'll open up the border, but we want to keep our citizens safe as well.
I think it's, unfortunately, a little bit of smoke and mirrors. You know, they're saying it's open, but it's not really open. And saying it's open, but it's mid-August. He just seems to be slow rolling this thing so long. And it's unfortunate because I've had meetings with the tourism industry up there. They're dying up there.
Western New York Congressman Chris Jacobs, the U.S.-Canadian border had been closed to all non-essential travel since the pandemic began. That was nearly a year and a half ago, but that changed. 3 weeks from now. After two grueling weeks at the site of the deadly condo collapse in Surfside, Florida, Scranton, Pennsylvania firefighters are back home. Scranton Fire Chief John Judge.
They were long days. We almost lost track of time because you were either on the pile or you were resting and rehabbing, and then you were right back at it. So it was 14 days of nonstop back and forth doing that.
Firefighter Matt McDonald.
Recovering the bodies of the victims. It was an honor to do that, to get them back to their families, to give them closure. I know that a lot of the family members had said that. It was a relief to get them back and to be able to say goodbye to them.
The death toll from the condo collapsed nearly 100. The victims range in age from 1 to 92. State lawmakers from the Binghamton, New York area requesting a federal emergency declaration for Broome, Shenango, and Otsego counties. It's because of severe storms that caused significant flooding, homes, roads, even crops damaged. And with all that rain, experts are urging caution when out on the water.
The higher water, the faster it flows. It's also off color, so you can't see rocks. So it's just generally a more dangerous situation. A lot of people will look at our river, and the first impression might be, well, it's a pretty lazy river. Definitely more dangerous than it appears, and especially in these conditions.
Water safety expert Jeff Skelding suggests you wear a life jacket while swimming, tubing, or kayaking until the water recedes. After being suspended due to the pandemic, the work search mandate is back. for those who collect unemployment in Pennsylvania. Andy Palumbo with Newswatch 16.
State officials say that because most of the state's adult population is now fully vaccinated, it's time for the unemployed to prove they are looking for work. No search, no money from the state.
Many small business owners say they cannot fill job openings because of extended unemployment benefits. The embattled mayor of Rochester, New York, Lovely Warren, and her husband due in court tomorrow to answer to weapons charges. This comes after the mayor's home was raided and her husband was arrested. A rifle and a pistol were found in the home. The mayor's 10-year-old daughter was home alone at the time. Minor League Baseball set to return early August to Buffalo, New York. It has been a while since the Bisons have played there. They'll be hosting the Rochester Red Wings at Salem Field August 10th. Josh Reed is sports reporter for WGRZ.
Bye-bye, Blue Jays. Hello, Herd. After nearly 2 years without Bisons games at Salem Field, the team will start playing home games downtown on Tuesday, August 10th.
The Bisons have been playing their home games in Trenton, New Jersey, while the Toronto Blue Jays were in Buffalo. The Blue Jays' last game in Buffalo is tomorrow before they head back to Canada. Let's talk more sports next, the two-minute drill. Here's Sonny Delfia.
Yeah, Bob, the chief of the Tokyo 2020 organizing committee did not rule out a last-minute cancellation of the games as more athletes tested positive for COVID-19 and major sponsors ditched plans to attend Friday's opening ceremony. ESPN, Marina Kimes.
The athletes getting the shot is one thing, but we are talking about 22,000 people flying into a country that, as Bo said, has a 22%, below 20% actually, vaccination rate on account of the availability of the shot. Who thought this was going to be a good idea?
We may have more information later today. To baseball, and the Red Sox homered three times in an 8-run first inning, opened up their 3-game series against the Blue Jays with a 13-4 win in Buffalo. That impressed manager Alex Cora.
Enrique did a good job with the two fastballs against the lefty. Danny, that was a good sign today. And obviously Hunter in an 0-2 count. That was a huge swing in the first inning.
Speaking of home runs, the Nationals annihilated the Marlins in Washington. Juan Soto launched a 2-run bomb. Trey Turner hammered a 3-run homer. John Lester had a 2-run blast. Josh Bell and Trey Barrera each had solo hits. Miguel Rojas had 3 hits, including a solo shot in the 8th. And for good measure, it's another from Juan Soto.
Blasted to deep left center field. Way back there, and it is gone. Number 16 for Juan Soto, number 2 tonight. It is 18-0.
Yeah, 18-0. That's when 18-1. The Mets smash 7 homers, shake off 4 errors, and a wild 15-11 win over the Reds. Kevin Pillar wasn't surprised by the win.
Yeah, I keep using the quote that we're built for this, and I think that today was a perfect example. We went through every single guy on the bench. I was the last guy off the bench. 2 new pitchers brought up today. We had some guys in the bullpen that were unavailable because they had to cover so many innings yesterday, and no one flinched.
In Houston, the Astros beat Cleveland 4-3. Pirates fall to the Diamondbacks 4-2. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delfia.
Thanks, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, 3 days till the opening ceremonies. Is Tokyo ready for the COVID Olympics? A hometown hero leading the fight to take down human traffickers, and mission accomplished for Jeff Bezos.
The human need for meaning and transcendence is so deep, there's hardly an end to which humans will not go in order to find it. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Movies like The Truman Show, The Matrix, Inception, and others are based on the premise that humans are unwittingly living in a computer simulation. And more recently, quite a few influential and brilliant minds are proposing this so-called simulation hypothesis as more than fiction. In some cases, this bizarre theory is morphing into something that looks suspiciously like a materialist spirituality. Back in 2016, Elon Musk, founder of Tesla and SpaceX, speculated to a tech gathering in California that the development of computer simulations that were indistinguishable from reality was inevitable. In fact, Musk believes that it's more likely that we live in a simulation than we do in the real world, and he's not alone. Recently in The New Yorker, Joshua Rothman described the increasing popularity of the simulation hypothesis among thinkers as diverse as philosophers, futurists, sci-fi writers, and technologists. The notion that we're all self-aware software trapped inside a computer-generated virtual reality first gained academic credibility in 2003 through a paper published by Oxford philosopher and futurist Nick Bostrom. In it, Bostrom argued that if we were to extrapolate the progress of current virtual reality and brain mapping technology into the future, the most likely result would be simulations indistinguishable from real life and programs indistinguishable from people. And if that were true, then it would be unlikely that we would be the first generations in history with the ability to produce such simulations. Now, this line of thinking has led Elon Musk to conclude that the chances that our world is base reality and that we're not living in a simulate reality are one in billions. It gets even weirder from here. Rothman suggests that the original programmers of our simulated reality might just find it interesting to watch us fight battles they've already won or lost. Others have suggested that perhaps thousands, maybe even millions of simulations are running at the same time. Philosopher Eric Steinhardt speculates in his book, Your Digital Afterlives, that perhaps simulations are nested within other simulations. And within this great chain of being, as he called it, some people might be promoted to a higher reality when they die, attaining some kind of immortality or resurrection. On a darker note, some suggest that if the computational cost of our creator's processors ever becomes too great, they may just simply pull the plug on all of us. Now, if all this starts to sound a little bit metaphysical, Rothman agrees. One of the appeals of simulation theory, he thinks, is that it gives atheists a way to talk about spirituality or something like it. Simulation theory also makes a massive assumption that consciousness can arise from and be transferred through matter. And yet, it never explains the origin of consciousness in the first place. Where did the programmers, these real beings made of flesh and blood, who inhabited what Musk calls base reality, get their sentience, their moral code, their meaning? As a theory of human existence, it only pushes back the ultimate questions of existence a step or two beyond our reach. Now, it's telling just how often advocates of this hypothesis use religious and spiritual language. Having reduced themselves to computer programs, somehow they still speak of things of transcendence, resurrection, morality, eternal life. Sometimes they talk about our supposed programmers in a way that sounds an awful lot like worship. And in the end, maybe that's the best evidence against this bizarre and complicated version of materialism, that those who embrace it cannot resist simulating spiritual reality, even while they attempt to explain it away. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Let's take it outside. Kevin Williams next.
Here is your family life weather forecast. For this afternoon, a mix of cloud and hazy sunshine. Be a thunderstorm in places, locally heavy. Possibly, the high temperature reaching into the 80s. Thunderstorms will be more widespread late this afternoon into early tonight, working from north to south across the area. Low temperatures, 60s. Tomorrow, morning clouds, a couple of showers giving way to some sunshine, first in New York, later in Pennsylvania. It'll be a cooler day with lowering humidity, high in the 70s and low 80s. And on Thursday, a fair amount of sunshine, the high in the 70s to near 80.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin. This is the Noon Report, and here's what's happening this Tuesday afternoon, the 20th of July. The world's richest person blasted off to the edge of space today. Amazon's Jeff Bezos and three others flew 62 miles above the Earth aboard the Blue Origin rocket. The whole trip only took about 11 minutes and was broadcast live on YouTube.
Our astronauts have passed the Kármán line at about 328,000 feet maximum altitude, and you hear they're having quite an experience.
Space consultant Bill Harwood says the Amazon founder is trying to conquer a new frontier.
He really wants to get his foot in the door in every sector of the space economy, from suborbital space tourism all the way to a new Glenn rocket that'll launch satellites and eventually people into space. He'll be competing directly head-to-head with Elon Musk and SpaceX when he goes there.
The 11-minute joyride came on the 52nd anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. Fully vaccinated U.S. citizens will be allowed into Canada beginning August 9th with a negative COVID test.
Many Western New Yorkers have been waiting more than a year to go to Canada. Canada will begin letting fully vaccinated U.S. citizens into the country on August 9th. However, even if fully vaccinated, visitors will still have to submit proof of a negative COVID-19 test taken at least 72 hours prior to entry. A date for the U.S. to allow fully vaccinated Canadians to cross the land land border is not yet known. Canadians are, however, allowed to come into the U.S. via air travel. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
Thank you, Dee. We're just 3 days away from the opening ceremonies of the Summer Olympics. Correspondent Steve Futterman in Tokyo says COVID could cast a large shadow on the two-week international sporting event.
Olympic athletes, both here in Tokyo and on their way to Tokyo, are likely a bit nervous today. Despite precautions, some competitors are testing positive, including Kara Aker, an alternate on the powerhouse U.S. women's gymnastics team, which includes Simone Biles. Aker's mother, Catherine, shocked at the news.
We are just incredibly thankful that we got her vaccinated.
Olympic historian David Walachensky says get used to this.
The question will be, will there be well-known athletes who are unable to compete?
Today here in Tokyo, Prime Minister Suga, speaking through an interpreter, tried to sound optimistic.
I am determined to take thorough measures to realize a safe and secure games.
Steve Futterman at the Summer Olympics in Tokyo.
A new book detailing former President Trump's last year in office hit store shelves today.
I Alone Can Fix It was written by Pulitzer Prize-winning reporters Carol Linning and Philip Rucker of the Washington Post. One of the more explosive claims in the book is that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and other top officers worried that Trump and his allies would attempt a coup after the November election and informally planned on different ways to stop it.
They decide, basically, as Phil and I learned, on a reverse Saturday Night Massacre, if anyone's familiar with that moment from Nixon's presidency, they start talking about how they will resign one by one, basically to stop the president in his tracks if he does something insane.
According to the book, Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley told aides he feared a potential Reichstag moment, referring to the 1933 fire at the German parliament used by Hitler to consolidate power. I'm Michael Kastner.
25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report. Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bill Price. Our guest this week, Julie Palmer from Buffalo. She's helping lead the fight to take out human trafficking.
Human trafficking is affecting all areas of the community. It's not just an inner city problem, but we're seeing it in towns and suburbs. Really, to be honest, there's no untouched area, every age, every demographic.
Talk to us about how your the organization there in Buffalo is working to stop this plague of human trafficking.
PATH stands for People Against Trafficking Humans. We have been providing services to address human trafficking through education, prevention, and restoration. It was developed through the faith community, through church community, Eastern Hills Church, back in 2010. And then God called me into it, the ministry, in 2012. And we now have physical space where we offer rehabilitative support services for survivors or those at risk.
We don't think human trafficking happens here. You know, it's in third world countries, but it is here. And it is prevalent. And how can folks recognize this crime and then report it?
There's a few different red flag indicators that easily community members can be watching for. When you look at youth and you see perhaps they're acquiring expensive items that you know they can't afford, perhaps somebody gives them a phone, because that's a really great way for somebody to control and track people. If you go to different salons, massage, hair salons, nail salons, there should be certificates on the wall for every person working. And so if that doesn't match the number of people you see there, that can be a red flag. You know, and human trafficking encompasses both sex and labor trafficking. Looking at who are people communicating with? How are they using their social media platforms?
We're speaking with Julie Palmer with the organization PATH, People Against Trafficking Humans. And who's most likely, Julie, to become a victim of human trafficking?
Anybody. We know of teenage girls in well-off family communities that leave their house in the middle of the night to go work. So there's just a lot of things happening right under us. And, you know, to be fair and honest, I have a master's degree in mental health and spent the first half of my career And I did not fully understand what was happening in human trafficking until 9 years ago when I got involved in this.
Yeah.
So it is a hidden underground issue that the more we know, the more we can address it.
Sure. And the more you know, the more you can empower yourself and the more you can protect yourself. And how can people who are listening right now make sure they are never a victim of this heinous crime?
Just being more open with your family, with your children. If they have a device, somehow they're going to get exposed. You know, on the gaming systems, people can do chat features. Perpetrators will use those. There's so much access. It is a upsetting issue, but at the same time, there is hope and there is an ability for us to understand it, to prevent it, and then to serve the people that are affected.
Yeah. And, you know, you are on the front lines of this and the victims, the people you're helping out, what do they commonly share with you?
I would say the number one thing that we hear is that they come in not at all feeling valued or of any worth. And what we have found most interesting, you know, we have staff that are well-trained master-level providers. So, you know, our programming and how we go about our services is important. But the one thing we've learned from our client feedback is while they appreciate all that, the thing that has meant the most and been the most transforming is that our staff are actually acting out what we profess in our faith, and that we are demonstrating love, that we are demonstrating they matter and have value, that they were created for a purpose beyond being hurt or exploited by someone. And then we live that out by truly loving and caring about them and walking alongside, not judging where they've come from or what's happened to them, because that's a lot of it. They feel they already come in feeling ashamed and feeling like, you know, especially if they know we're a faith-based organization, the concern of what we'll think of them. And we feel it's so important for them to know that they are loved no matter what has happened to them or where they've come from, and that they do matter.
That's Julie Palmer from Buffalo, this week's Hometown Hero. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life. All right, Bill, thank you. Hometown Heroes comes your way every Tuesday during the noon report or online anytime, familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A warm, hazy, humid afternoon upon us. The arrival of a cold front from the north will then spark thunderstorms as we head into tonight. Behind the front, somewhat cooler, less humid air will work into the region tomorrow. For this afternoon, a mix of cloud and hazy sunshine. Be a thunderstorm in places, locally heavy. Possibly, the high temperature reaching into the 80s. Thunderstorms will be more widespread late this afternoon into early tonight, working from north to south across the area. Low temperatures, 60s. Tomorrow, morning clouds, a couple of showers giving way to some sunshine, first in New York, later in Pennsylvania. It'll be a cooler day with lowering humidity, high in the 70s and low 80s. And on Thursday, a fair amount of sunshine, the high in the 70s to near 80.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Finally at noon, newlyweds from the Southern Tier have set off on a unique adventure together. They're on a more than 2,000-mile bike trip from central New York to the southern tip of Florida. It's all to raise funds for the Central New York chapter of Youth for Christ. Kyle and Becca Brown began their adventure in early July.
We started in Unadilla, New York at the Central New York Youth for Christ Youth Center.
This is actually my first bike trip.
Yeah.
We thought it'd be a good experience and been fun.
The newlyweds are riding a tandem bike 2,100 miles to Key West, Florida.
The tandem requires a lot of communication and cooperation between both parties. The brakes, when you're shifting, when a bump's coming up, everything. Yeah, I think it's good for the start of our marriage as well.
Good for your health, good for your marriage, and of course, good for spreading the gospel. The Browns hope to raise $1 a mile during that 2,100-mile bike trip together. And that's the world we live in. Tuesday, the 20th of July. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.